New York, and WBAI.org for all of our listeners on the web. Happy Kwanzaa to everyone celebrating their first day of Kwanzaa. That last program was On the Count, a show which you can hear every Saturday from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Coming up next, we have Mr. Bob Law with From the Streets here on 99.5 FM WBAI New York. Stay tuned.
Go ahead, Giovanni. You're doing a really great job. We're real proud of Giovanni. As we get started, first let me wish you all a happy holiday as we move into this holiday season. Happy holiday to you and all that are dear to you as we move looking for what is best and what is good, what is meaningful, what is powerful. That is what we are going to celebrate as we move forward. It is the first day of Kwanzaa, unity, emoja. Umojo is the first day of Kwanzaa, as you know, as we begin to celebrate and observe Kwanzaa. It is the day after Christmas, and many of us have celebrated Christmas a little bit differently this year. Families not able to gather as they had. For a lot of families, there are days like this that are family reunions. And so you might miss having all of the family around and all of the food and all of the love and fellowship. But it is coming back. We shall survive. Let me just tell you this. You know, the New York Urban League releases a State of Black New York report. And this is the first one in over a decade. It's done in conjunction with the Robert Hood Columbia University Poverty Tracker, with support from the United Way of New York City and New York Women's Foundation. The State of Black New York report covers contemporary issues affecting African Americans in New York City, which is kind of important since this year or next year, which you'll be here in about a week. Next year, there will be a mayor's race in New York City, and the African American community has a great deal at stake. So we're going to talk a little bit about that with the director of the New York City Urban League. Before that, a conversation with Carl Rodney. Carl Rodney is CEO and publisher of the New York Carib News. There's a lot of information that we want to cover. There's a lot that we want to get into. So I invite you to join us and move in a little bit closer to your radio. You know who you are. I'm Bob Law, and it is time for From the Streets with me, Bob Law. It's 11:03 on a sunny Saturday morning in the city. It's cold outside. This is perfect radio weather where you can stay indoors, moving a little bit closer to your radio. You can feel the warmth. So stay close to WBAI all day today. It'll make you feel better, as well as it will provide a great deal of information for you, a great deal of intellectual stimuli, if you will. We've got a lot that we want to cover, and also saying happy holidays to everybody at 9:10 a.m. Superstation in Detroit. Don't want to forget them. They're with us every Saturday morning. However, in Detroit, it'll be Sunday evening as they join us here for From the Streets. Good to have you all with us as well. We're moving into a conversation with Carl Rodney. Carl Rodney is the CEO and publisher of the New York Carib News. And he's been a political factor, figure, personality in New York City for quite some time. Carl Rodney, are you with me?
I'm with you, Bob, and it's such a pleasure to be with you. And congratulations to you for your staying power.
Thank you so much. You know, the Caribbean community has historically been seen as a kind of a separate and distinct community with, you know, operating within New York City and other cities around the country, there's a Caribbean community. But when you look at what how things have shaped up here in the last decade even, and the powerful presence of people from the Caribbean, from the powerful presence of the Caribbean community in this nation, you know, there's Stacey Abrams is Caribbean. Everybody knows Kamala Harris here in New York City. Yvette Clark, the Congresswoman, is Caribbean. There's any number of people who are very prominent and who come out of what is called the Caribbean community. But I wondered, though, when you look at the people who are and the moves that are being made and the power that is being acquired and the presence of people from the Caribbean, and I wonder, is it still, can we still say that there's a distinctly separate Caribbean community? The Caribbean community seems to be very much a part of the overall, well, if we talk about New York City, it certainly seems to be part of the overall structure of New York City. It's not separate at all. So I wanted to just get your reaction to that just before we get started. Is there still a distinctly separate Caribbean community?
You know, Bob, there's a separate Caribbean community just in terms of some of the geographic proximities. But the history of the Caribbean in the United States has been one of a progress of partnership. I mean, they've always been very keen in the struggle and very involved in the fight for justice. And it goes back, you know, to even before Garvey, when we come up mm-hmm. to people like Belafonte, that have always been the city of Chicago is founded by Haitians. And so they've always ingrained themselves, the Shirley Chisholms of the world. I mean, so they've always played this role, Bob, and I think you and I had this conversation some years ago, of this partnership, this involvement in being black and knowing what it is to be a part of the struggle. So that partnership has existed for centuries, decades. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of their own assertion as a community, and it has grown out of the larger immigration flow, there is this identification of convenience, but not necessarily of separation. So the commonality of what we face and what we know we have to overcome has been one in total coordination with our African American friends, and so we can now with unity say, we are part of the struggle, we are identified, and certainly assert some interest in how it impacts the region, mm-hmm. The Caribbean region. So it's a dynamic of an immigrant group that has been here for a long time and has played its role in the development of the...
Absolutely. And it's played a really powerful leadership role that yes. people might have just... taken for granted. We never really thought of, well, that brother is Caribbean. You know, we just thought of, well, that brother is the leader, like Garvey. You know?
Yeah, yeah, and, right,
and you look at any number of people who, as you mentioned, Shirley Chisholm and then Una Clark before Yvette Clark here in New York City. Interesting, interesting. Let me just ask you this, as we look at that vibrant Caribbean community, and moving forward into next year politically, moving forward with the mayor's race coming up in New York City, we're beginning to talk to people now about the mayor's race and what it is that people are in need of or even are expecting. Now, are you getting any feedback? You were as publisher of the New York Carib News. This is a major Caribbean publication in New York City. Are you getting any feedback yet on the mayor's race, like what it is that people expect of the mayor, or have people begun to give any thought? We've been struggling with Trumpism to move beyond him. Has anybody given any thought yet to the mayor's race and how that affects the Caribbean community as well?
Right, right. Yes, we have, and what has happened, Bob, is that a group of us black-owned publication in New York, and we call it BMNA, Black Media Association of New York, we have come together to deal with the a lot of issues, of course, but certainly in 2021, the mayoral issue, and we have been determined not to be separated. You know, we have our own issues, yes, and we want to promote it, and we'll do that, but we want to do it in concert with black-owned publications and have a united front in how we deal with the mayoral candidates and how we look at the issues to make sure that we're not picked off one by one, you know, the usual mm-hmm. divide and conquer. So the issues as it impact the black community and the Caribbean community is clearly a part of that, is how do we unite, how do we get the most out of it. So that has been a coalition that has been growing and it's establishing itself, and so we're looking at that. Clearly a number of the candidates have already reached out to us and have been indicating their own interest in the community. And we know that the community can play a tremendous role, as it did in the election of Mayor Dinkins when it was mobilized. And, mm-hmm. and so we want to mobilize the community in concert with our other black partners. So again, Bob, it's this partnership that we see is critical. We have our, you know, various issues, but the partnership is very important, particularly in New York City now. And the immigrant community, and we are the kind of black immigrant community, needs to come with a larger group and face those issues as we see them impacting the totalness of what we want to get accomplished.
Let me just say this. We're talking with Carl Rodney. He is the CEO and publisher of the New York Carib News. In a minute, how long have you been publishing the Carib News? And I know it's difficult to publish and stay afloat. Many publications come and go. The Carib News came and is still here. And for how many years have you been publishing the Carib News?
Bob, it's been 39 years.
Whoa.
We founded the Carib News when, as you pointed out, there was a large growing Caribbean community without a consistent voice. And so 39 years ago, we started weekly, and we have not missed a publication since. And we have a partnership with other LIB, BLS, mm-hmm. And BAI, of course. We did quite a few shows with Don Ross when he was here. And, of course, you know, so it's mm-hmm. been 39 years. And
yep. We are. Wonderful. That's really significant to be able to publish and stay afloat and publish and never miss an issue. Excellent. You know, there's a looking at an article in another Caribbean publication that talks about the Trump. It says, never say Caribbean Americans did not vote out Trump. They did in Pennsylvania, in Georgia, and in Milwaukee. Caribbean community, there's a Caribbean community in many, many cities. Maybe more so, some of us thought that the Caribbean community was mostly East Coast here. I don't know if that's really true, that it's mostly, it might be that it's mostly East Coast, but the Caribbean community is spreading around throughout the country. And as we said, it's really not so much spreading as a separate community, but it's very much an integral part of the black community. And I wondered if anybody, with your own research and your own feedback, and you talk about there being issues that you want to see addressed, although there needs to be a partnership. Seems to me that the Caribbean community is already in the partnership. We're already brothers and sisters, and we're clear about that. Maybe some other folk might try to divide us, but many of us are already clear that we are all the same. And but what are the issues, though, that you think ought to be put in front of the candidates for mayor?
Right, but the candidate for mayor is the issue. You know, it's around education, of course, around housing, it's around employment. It's around those issues, and of course, the awareness that there are cultural and heritage issues that other groups over the years have enjoyed that you would want to see. For the Caribbean community, you know, cultural center, the expression of the culture. But those are things that will come. But we, Bob, it's so important for us to have that economic base in our community. And I think one of the issues we have had is to make sure that the small businesses in the community survive. And Yvette Clark, who sits on the small business committee in Congress, who have been pushing that. So it's those things, immigration, not so much in the city, but businesses and education and the access to education and those issues that impact us as a people. And we want to be sure that that is taken into consideration. And as you pointed out in your commentary, is that the Caribbean community has been politically active in terms of vote, and it's not just in New York City, but certainly in Georgia, as you pointed out, and even in Ohio, and certainly in Miami. And to a large extent, there's a huge group in Houston. So there's this melding of issues and the collaboration that we see as necessary. And we kind of preach that, Bob, because we can't make progress unless we collaborate. We can raise our issues, but we can't be arrogant to believe that our issues are the only issues that needs to be addressed. So it's a collaboration we see as so important, and one that we have as a publication. Make sure that we do it. We want to identify as Caribbean. We want to bring in Caribbean news. We want you to understand the culture, and we want to understand the region, and we want the support. But we also want to build a bridge of understanding and appreciation both ways. And so if we look at it in that sense, it is what we're pushing. On a national scene, there are lots of issues that we have regionally that we would like to see happen, that is other regions or other group have access to and are beneficiary of it. And you know, Bob, and I know you've gone through a lot of this, is the old question of the mess that the colonies have left in the Caribbean, and how you get out of that, and how you marshal the public support here in the United States to get these things going. And, you know, it's an old issue of white supremacists here. It's the colonial legacy there. It's those kinds of things that we need to start coming together in a global sense. And push those kinds of issues that are almost life threatening, in terms of our own survival. So that is the thrust that we.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's the thrust that we see, and that's collaboration, because the racial reckoning is here in the United States. It's in Jamaica. It's in the Caribbean. It's in black communities in London. And for, since the Garvey movement, it's the first time that you're seeing this awareness, this the understanding of what where and how the oppression comes about, slavery, and here and slavery in the Caribbean, and of that system of sort of created just as a mess and an underpinning that it's a criminal act that these perpetrators, even generation later, must pay for because they are the beneficiary of all of those issues. And it's a kind of global reparation, colonial mess, racial reckoning that we all, it's top most in our mind. Of course, we have the pandemic, and we know Caribbean countries are at the back of the line for the vaccine, and we have to fight to get some of that attention. But it all comes back to how the priorities are set and how black or people of color around globally are looked upon and are treated. And
Let me just say this, though. I'm about to run out of time. We have, I think that the key that you have pointed out is the need for unity. This being the first day of Kwanzaa, Umoja is unity. And unity is essential. As we look at a political season, it very often is or are politicians who would attempt to divide, come into the black community and talk to the Caribbean community as separate from the African-American community. That is very often a very deliberate strategy in order to dilute the power. You are pointing out an awareness of that and promoting the idea that unity is going to be key. Let me just say this. We're running out of time, but I appreciate you, Carl Wright. I need to get you to come back and we'll have some further conversations. We'll talk a little bit more as things begin to happen and develop, particularly as we start moving forward with this mayoral race in New York City. We would appreciate getting the insight and input from the Carib News. And I appreciate you getting this conversation with me started this morning and joining us here at WBAI. Thank you so much for being a part of this conversation. We're going to call back. Now that we have your number, we're calling you again.
Bob, it's always a pleasure to be with you, and you've always been a voice that we can depend on for so many decades. Anytime you need me, I'm ready and available. And congratulations again.
All right. Thank you so much. Thank you for joining us. As we talk about Kwanzaa and unity and moving forward, I want you to be aware of the International Virtual Kwanzaa Celebration. This is the first. The brothers at the Ancestors at the International African Arts Festival, along with the National Association of Kawaida Organizations, presents an international virtual Kwanzaa celebration. And so you can attend from everywhere. And, you know, very often, or up until now, with the pandemic, or prior to this pandemic, Dr. Marlana Karinga would be at Boys and Girls High in Brooklyn for the Kwanzaa celebration. But this year, it is going to be virtual, and everybody can attend from all over the country. And it will be with the founder of Kwanzaa, Dr. Marlana Karinga, and the central theme is Kwanzaa and the well-being of the world, living and uplifting the seven principles. And you should kind of tune into that. It is going to be tomorrow, December 27th, and Kucha Jagalia is tomorrow. But tickets are available. Now, you have to get tickets, but the tickets are available online. And I'm looking for information to tell you where to call. Dan, there's a phone number that you can call for information. And y'all ready? 718-789-3264. 718-789-3264. A international virtual Kwanzaa celebration. People will be joining into this this celebration on from all over the country, from all over the world. It is international. It is online. You can attend as well. It's from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 2 p.m. to 4 p.m., 1 o'clock to 3 Central Time, but 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. for the International Virtual Kwanzaa Celebration. I believe it might be the first. It doesn't say here the first, but it might very well be the first international virtual Kwanzaa Celebration. So to get ticket information, tickets are available at 1aaffestival.org. You know, this is a one or an I. 1aaffestival.org. But here's what you should do. Call this number, 718-789-3264, so that you can get the clear and specific information for the International Virtual Kwanzaa Celebration. It is tomorrow, and it is from 2 to 4 p.m. on tomorrow. Kuchajagalia, self-determination, is what is being celebrated tomorrow. Right now, it is about unity, umoja. And as Carl Rodney has pointed out, there is a real need for us to understand the necessity of unity and not being divided, separated one from the other. As we look out for this holiday season, we are looking for what it is that is of great value, what it is that unites us, what it is that holds us together. And even in this very turbulent time, we have a need to celebrate what is good and what is righteous, and come together in the spirit of what is good, the spirit of what is righteous. Here's our sister Allison Williams with some thoughts about that. This is WBAI 99.5 in New York City and at 9:10 a.m. Superstation in Detroit, Michigan. Moving a little bit closer to your radio on this cold Saturday morning in the city. It is 11:28, and I mentioned earlier an important study that has been done by the Urban League. The Urban League has been doing a state of Black America for decades, but this year, the New York Urban League has released the State of Black New York, and it is the first in over a decade. It's done in conjunction with the Robin Hood Columbia University Poverty Tracker, with support from the United Way of New York City and New York Women's Foundation. The State of Black New York report covers contemporary issues and looks at It moves to examine the position of Black households in the city's growth economy and highlight disparities among Black New Yorkers. But I think what is key is that it proposes solutions. And it seems to me that that is really very important at this point in time. As we look at some significant changes, of course, taking place in the nation and some of the changes that are taking place in New York City specifically, as we look at changes taking place now in the city council, changes taking place in the mayor's office, and Black community right up in the midst of all of that, with a concern for the extent to which we will be adequately addressed, or our needs and concerns will be adequately addressed. Also, part of our concern has to be, how much do we know? How much research have we done? How well prepared are we to deal with the issues that are critical to our survival? The New York Urban League has taken a step in helping on that level. And Arva Rice is president and CEO of the New York Urban League. And she joins us now for this conversation. Arva Rice, are you with me?
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me on the show and engaging me in this conversation.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. I think it's really important. The New York Urban League has not done a study on New York specifically in over 10 years. What happened? Why did you decide that this was the time to do one?
Well, we thought it was important for a number of different reasons. First of all, we recognize that there's going to be a changeover, as you just mentioned, that we're going to be having a new mayor. Most of our city council is going to be changing over, and we're also going to be, at the time, we were hoping for a new presidency, and luckily we were correct in that. The New York Urban League is also celebrating a significant milestone, and that is that we turned 100 years old in the midst of COVID. And so we wanted to say it's 100 years later, and so how are Black folks faring? And we didn't want to talk about that just anecdotally, but we wanted to be able to have the research and the statistics in front of us. So those were some of the reasons why we said that we're going to make sure that we produce the State of Black New York this year.
Now, one of the things that the report says is that inequality is unacceptable. I mean, that is kind of the title, even for the report, as you look at what is happening in New York City. So let me put it like this. There's the notion that New York City is making progress, mm-hmm. and things are better than they were some years ago, a decade ago. And New York City is making progress, and there's still a lot of work to be done. But there's Black faces in high places all over New York City, public advocates, attorney general, members of Congress. How would you sum up, though, the state of Black New York within that context? How much progress are we making? How did you conclude that the way to characterize this study was to point out that inequality is unacceptable, serious inequality?
Yeah, and thank you. You said that so eloquently and well. I mean, we do have Blacks represented in levels of government and even in levels of corporation, which we've never had before. So we have achieved in some incredible, mighty ways. But the very first area that we look at in the state of Black New York is in economics. And the New York Urban League has focused on the economics of the civil rights movement for decades. And so as we went through this study, we found that 52% of New Yorkers, Black New Yorkers, still make $50,000 or less in a city that has become increasingly more expensive, has become increasingly more gentrified. There has been growth in jobs in the job market, but 50% of the growth since 2010 has been in jobs where people make an annual salary of $40,000 or less. And so we recognize and we appreciate the growth. The numbers of Black women, this was obviously the year of the Black woman. The numbers of Black women who have graduated from college or starting small businesses are doing better than their grandmothers would have ever dreamed. And yet there is this inequality, and it is systemic, it is long-term, and it is unacceptable.
Let me just say that again, because that's one of the things that people point to. We don't know if the people point to that as detractors or tricksters, but one of the things that people point out is that the employment figures that you mentioned, people are those numbers are up. However, when you talk about earnings, but however, was it 52% are employed now? More so than before. However, half of those in that number are employed in categories in jobs that pay $40,000 a year or less. You know, and it's important to make that clear distinction. The report points to some key findings, and I just wanted you to be able to kind of walk through what some of those findings were. And also, now, people can get the report. The report is online, is that right?
Correct. You can go to the Urban League's website, which is www.nyul.org. And the very first thing you will see is information on the state of Black. You'll be able to download the report in its entirety and also look at some of the essays from some New Yorkers that folks on your line will particularly recognize, including Jennifer Jones Austin of the Federation of Protestant Welfare Agencies and John Flatow of Medgar Evers, who have contributed essays to the state of Black New York.
Now, when we look at some of those key findings and look at some of the things that the report, as you said, economics, health, education, the digital divide. Let's look at education for a minute. College remains a buttress against poverty, and Black students are not being prepared for college, work, or life. Now, that that's a significant statement. I think people need to understand. The report points out that Black students are not being prepared for work or life. Now, can you talk a little bit more about that? What do you mean by that?
Sure. So at the Urban League, we believe that education is in its best form designed to help people to get through college, work, and life, right? And so education is supposed to provide opportunities for individuals to find out not only how to fill out bubbles and tests, but to be able to become true problem solvers. And problem solvers, particularly in the areas of science, technology, engineering, and math, is what we would love to see more young people focus in, which leads to the next focus of the report, which is on the digital divide. And so we recognize that for the first wave and revolution that Black folks were not at all a part of that. And then when the Industrial Revolution happened, many of our ancestors were, picking cotton and oranges. And so now that we're in this technology revolution, we want to make sure that our young people are prepared for success. And whether it's in college, not everybody has to go to college. We certainly encourage people to go to college because it widens your the network that you have and your ability to be, to be mobile and to bounce back against poverty, as you mentioned in another part of the report. And so, and then also we believe, like I said, that education prepares individuals for life. And so being able to provide young people with, in our report, we talk about the SAT, which is, the test people take to prepare them to be accepted into college. And African Americans are still scoring 17% below our white counterparts. And so we think it's important for us to be able to score higher and scores in tests like that in order that we can be situated to attend college and have other educational options.
You know, it's interesting, the conversation about education. We want to direct more young people into college. The report points out how there is a there are discrepancies between Black and white achievement gaps. There's a Black and white achievement gap that still exists in New York City schools. And not part of it, the total reason for that is what Jonathan Kozel has described as savage inequalities in the public school system. So that the Black and brown students are in a different pipeline than the white students. The resources, the technology, the money, the budget, the quality teachers, all of that set aside for whites in suburban schools, even though the tax money that pays for that comes primarily out of New York City, comes very much so out of the Black community. Black taxpayers are paying for quality education for other children outside of the Black community. while in the black community still suffers from the savage inequalities that are part of the New York City public school system. So you've got young people who are coming out of high school and being just promoted along, just passed along, being educated way below grade level. And it's interesting that somehow that has not been the real challenge to restructure the public school system, you know, to give those young people who are in that school system a chance even for to prosper in the 21st century. That's why looking at the digital divide, I think, is really important. There's an interesting conversation, just as an aside, there's an interesting conversation a few years ago about whether or not college athletes should be paid. And so that was the whole discussion. And then there's a teacher at one university who said, what about instead of paying them, what if we give them an education? Because they're coming here and they're playing ball. And they don't take tests. They don't study. They're not. They're just here. What if we give them an actual education? You know, and what about the? And I think that's kind of an important thing. But she said that there are students who are coming into college with their scholarship, who are really poorly prepared. If without that scholarship, they couldn't get into a college anywhere in the country. What about if we upgrade the public schools so that these youngsters have an opportunity to excel? Right. You know, let's talk a little bit about the digital divide. I think that is part of what my concern is.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, you said so many great things. Let me just quickly respond to a couple of them. When it comes to the school system, we do have examples of things that really work and particularly work for us. We're talking about black boys. And so I think that David Banks at the Eagle Academy has done an outstanding job of training young people for college and success, and has a terrific graduation rate and success rate. We've given scholarships from the New York Urban League to some of his young men. And I think that we have small examples of success, and what we need to do is to scale them in order to be successful, because we need to make sure that we have teachers who truly understand African-American culture, can recognize and not attribute black boys as being, you know, criminalized rather than little white boys as being precocious, right, and adventuresome. And so we just need to make sure that those inherent biases, those implicit biases, don't continue to make their ways into schools. And then also we just need to be able to train our young people, because we come to work with, we come to school with a smaller vocabulary than our white counterparts. We know less words. We have less word recognition. So let's recognize that and be able to be there for our young people, because we are smart. We are capable. We just need supports in other ways. So I just wanted to say that about education. And as you talk about the digital divide, clearly the biggest, you know, headline that continues to be the largest headline is around COVID and the way that it's impacted and affected our communities. And clearly there are all the ways in which it impacted us in terms of our health, the number of people who died, the way the comorbidities had a huge impact on us, but also the 1.2 million public school children who were not in school, were in school, came out of school, were taught through remote learning, all laid bare the fact that the access to technology, the number of laptops that any black family has is different than white families. And we will not know until years from now the impact that COVID has had educationally on our communities, but we know that it is huge. And if there was ever a time for us to step up and volunteer to be a big brother, be a big sister, you know, to volunteer to even have, whether it is remote relationships with young people through some of this programming, it is now, because we are at risk of losing classes full of young people through COVID.
You know, I had a conversation with a broadcaster out in the Midwest who was talking about that very same concern and how the children are, his concern also was it'll be some time before we might realize the effect that this COVID has had on pushing children further back, people, children who are not able to go to school, not, you know, this is not working. The report points out that the lack of internet access even in the homes. Only 54% of households with less than $20,000 in income have internet in the home. And a lot of what is happening now, the teaching that is going on, trying to get around COVID, the internet is becoming an essential part of that. And one of the things, though, that I talked about and I'm going to begin to push even harder here is that these children don't have to be left in the lurch like that. Just as you just mentioned, are people volunteering to help with that? We need to set up Saturday academies. And I know that other ethnic groups in New York City are setting up Saturday academies now. They have done it to help prepare their children for the specialized test to get into the 9 quality high schools in New York City. There's some controversy over that, removing the test. However, nothing stops us. We've got engineers, we've got mathematicians, we've got people who can teach, and we're going to have to take on that responsibility to set up Saturday academies starting now and help bringing these children up to grade level rather than just lament how far behind they are falling and will continue to fall as a result of, as the report points out, the digital divide. But we can compensate for that. You know, we've got a lot of talent in our community. I've got to organize them and get I used to have a network of Respect Yourself Saturday Academies. We need to do that again as a response to this digital divide and how the children are falling behind. We're talking with Ava Rice, who is the executive director of the Urban League, president and CEO of the New York Urban League. And we're kind of moving quickly through the Urban League State of New York report, State of Black New York. The with the mayor's race coming up, do things begin to emerge from the report that can lead to a agenda that the black community puts in front of the mayoral candidates, do you think?
Oh, absolutely. When we think about those things that are necessary on the national level, but also on the local level, I think that they definitely fall into the 6 areas that the Urban League's State of Black New York report talks about. As I mentioned, we're always going to lead at the Urban League with economics, but economics, education, digital divide, when it comes to criminal justice, and then also looking at the issues of health. This report lays out a lot of the inequalities, but also talks about what are some of the way forward. And as we, as the New York Urban League, joining with our partners, the National Action Network, the NAACP, we will be speaking to the mayoral candidates as well as the comptroller and as well as the city council members who are running as well about what is going to be their agenda and how they propose to work through some of these inequalities and develop and respond to our agenda that we put forward for Black America, Black New York.
Now, the report is available online. You can, can say again how people can get it online.
Sure. So the report is available at our website at www.nyul.org. There they can download the full report in its entirety, as well as look at some of the essays by some prominent New Yorkers who folks may be familiar with, including Kirsten Foy and also Jennifer Jones Austin of the Federation of Protestant Welfare Agency.
We only have a few minutes. Let me see if anybody wants to have a comment or a question, maybe I can get you in if we can do it really quickly. I'm at 212-209-2877. Ava Rice is on your phone at 212-209-2877. She is the president. I'm trying to give you a new title here. She is the president and CEO of the New York Urban League. And we've been talking about the New York Urban League, the State of Black New York report. The first one that has been issued in more than 10 years, but it is issued at a time that is strategically important as we look at the changes that are taking place in New York City and the black community being fully prepared for the 21st century, being fully, you know, we're talking about how we had such a hard time in 2020 and we're glad to get out of 2020. But very often I'm wondering, yes, but as we come out of 2020, are we ready for 21? You know, have we given any thought to solutions? Have we given any thought to how we should move forward? Giovanni, do I have anybody?
Yes, you do. We have about three callers right now.
All right, we'll try and get at least one caller in. Let's go quickly to the phone.
All righty. Hello, caller. You're on the air. Please tell us your name and where you are calling from.
Yeah, hi. This is Ian from the Bronx.
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I think, you know, too much stress is placed on, you know, having internet or not having the internet. People were able to learn before there was such a thing as the internet. You know, what about just getting back to good old-fashioned learning where you can read a book and, you know, try and comprehend what the hell is going on? And I think the idea of Saturday academies is great because that's what, you know, like the Asians do that, the Chinese and the Koreans, they do that with their kids. You know, they don't let their kids have too much spare time where they could, you know, free time where they can get into trouble. They put in extra work, and that's what I think black families have to do. You know, make sure that your kids, you know, get an appreciation for learning.
Right, absolutely.
When
I got
young,
it. Let me just do this. I'm sorry to interrupt, but we're going to run out of time. But I appreciate your thought. Just wanted to give people at least an opportunity to your reaction to the conversation you've been hearing. I think I can maybe do one more caller.
All right, cool. Hey, caller, you're on the air. Please tell us your name and where you are calling from.
This is Veronica Nikki. Happy Umoja. I also hope that we practice the principles of Ma'at. In doing the Saturday schools, we can also do Sunday schools. I don't see why we cannot do schools throughout the week because different people have different times. And
all right,
then we can introduce the things that are important and significant. Thank you.
All right. All right. Now, thank you. Thank you for calling. Arva Rice, thank you so much for spending this time with us on this Saturday morning, making people aware of the Urban League, the State of Black New York report. Hopefully people will download it and look at the recommendations that are made. The report lays out a lot of things that we really need to be fully aware of. And so it is in that sense alone, it is a very valuable document that should be circulating, resonating, was the word I was looking for. It should be resonating throughout the black community. It looks at education, the digital divide, civic participation, social and criminal justice. And part of my concern is that people have not given those issues the sufficient thought. And we have a concern for all of that, but really have not given those issues sufficient thought. The Urban League report helps us very much so with that and does the research and offers some analysis and hopefully it can increase our understanding of what we must do in order to move forward. Thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Thank you.
All right. As Mavis Staples points out, we've got work to do. There's still work to do. Saturday academies is a good idea. Someone said, we ought to have it on Saturday and Sunday. Do you have a location in mind that you could provide for Saturday or Sunday? You know, the technology is staying on top of the technology is essential in the 21st century. Come on, y'all, let's get serious. But we need to do these Saturday academies. We need to do them wherever, whenever, and we need to create that right now so that we can begin to protect our children and give them a future. Don't let them fall behind because of the digital divide. Instead, we can help bring them up to grade level. We've done it before. We'll do it again. But as I say, stay close to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York, 9:10 a.m. in Superstation in Detroit, because this is indeed a time when we have to continue to get the work done. Come on, Mavis.
I'm running, running for freedom, y'all. 'Cause 99 and a half just won't do. Now, if your God won't help you, you better try mine. My God is a freedom God. He'll make a way for you. In a weary land, he'll give you rest when you're tired. Protect you on a danger zone. He'll guide you down a rugged road and bring you out on the bright side.
From Spearhead, and this is WBAI, listener-supported, non-commercial radio in New York.
This is Reverend Jesse Jackson of the Rainbow Push Coalition. Please call and support WBAI, non-commercial, peace and justice radio in New York.
People moving out, people moving in, why? Because of the color of the skin.
Run, 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 put your show can't hide. Yeah,
let me. Hello, I'm Isaac Ferguson. I'm inviting you to tune in on Saturday, 4 to 6 p.m. for Caribbean Voices and Beyond, when we will bring you news, views, and important issues affecting the Caribbean community in particular and the immigrant community in general. Tune in 4 to 6 p.m. to Caribbean Voices and Beyond on WBAI 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the Internet.
WBAI is not only a progressive free speech radio station, but it is also your opportunity for several perks through the BAI Buddy System. Becoming a buddy is simple. Donate as little as $10 on a monthly basis, thus forming a relationship that benefits you, the listener, and us here at 99.5 FM. After becoming a buddy, you'll receive a WBAI tote bag and a membership card that enables you to enjoy discounted services at Zipcar, Bacchus French Bistro, Revolution Books, and more locations in the New York region. Simply visit give2wbai.org. That's give2wbai.org. And donate today. We are a listener-supported radio station, but as a buddy, WBAI can also support you.
And good morning still. You're tuned in to 99.5 FM WBAI New York and WBAI.org for all of our listeners tuning in on the web. That last program was From the Streets with your host Bob Law, a show which you can hear every